super luxury transport for the wealthy going to glamorous destinations. Really, it is sort of the Motel 6 of Star Carriers, and its regular route is between places that are definitely in the low-rent district of Jarapta Space. Okay, whatever. Rising from my chair, I straightened my shoulders and looked toward the little holographic dot that represented the virtual camera lens. Bilby, connect me with the captain over there.
Channel open. The High Roller's AI acknowledges the link.
This is General Joseph Bishop of the United Nations Navy warship Valkyrie. It still felt weird to call myself a general. For years after I was promoted to colonel, I had a bad case of imposter syndrome. Pinning a colonel's eagles on my uniform always made me feel like a fake, like at any moment someone would tap me on the shoulder and say the promotion was all a mistake. Now, wearing a general star, I had that feeling again, even though I knew that I had earned that star, damn it. Maybe a bit of imposter syndrome is a good thing to keep me grounded. A beetle appeared in the holographic display tank, wearing a white uniform that was much fancier than the drab garments worn by the Jarapta fleet captains. Probably the captain of the High Roller had to dress to impress the civilian passengers.
"This is Captain Emil Strangendor of the Transport High Roller. On behalf of my company and crew, I demand to—"
"Captain Rogendahl," I interrupted her. "We can waste a lot of time going back and forth with useless bullshit, or I can get straight to the point." She hesitated, then nodded, her antennas bouncing. It was strange how when I first met the Jarapta, their appearance stirred an instinctive revulsion in me. But now I didn't think they were creepy at all. Having met them, I decided I liked the beetles, and their insect-like form didn't bother me.
"Please," she said. "Stid your business."
"We need to borrow your ship." I held up a hand to forestall her protest. "I know you have a schedule to keep, and I'm sorry about that. If I could offer compensation, I would, but our peoples have not worked out any sort of currency exchange. And anyway, if your company hired your vessel to us, that would get the Rindaloo upset because you would be violating the terms of your treaty with them. You surely don't want to invite that sort of trouble."
"No, we do not," she agreed.
"Good. So, to avoid getting you in trouble by appearing to cooperate with us, we are simply stealing your ship. It will not be your responsibility. You have no choice in the matter, and your employers will certainly understand that." Her facial expressions, which I had trouble reading anyway, twisted through a variety of emotions before she quickly recovered.
"What will happen to my crew?"
She's a good captain, I told myself. She didn't waste energy fighting the inevitable. We chose that ship because as a civilian transport, it had minimal defensive capability. Even one of Valkyrie's point defense cannons could shred the hull, cut right through the long spine. "We know you have two dropships. Get your crew into those craft, and after we take over your ship, we will jump in near the inhabited world here." My stupid brain could not remember the name of the place. Not that it mattered.
"General Bishop, our momentum will carry us past the planet before we could decelerate."
"Yes, sorry about that. A ship from the planet will have to come out to rendezvous with you. I'm sure that can be arranged." Her body language was distinctly unhappy, even with my thin knowledge of the Jarapta.
"You are putting me in a very bad position here. Surely you understand that?"
"I do. Captain Rogendahl, perhaps you have not considered an aspect of this situation that could be very favorable to you."
"Favorable? To me?"
"To you and your crew. Think about it. I have not told you why we need your ship. Wagering about what we will do with your ship has got to be juicy action, right?" There was an excited uproar on her end of the conversation, her off-screen crew all talking at once. The audio cut out while she got her crew settled down. Then she turned toward the camera again.
"That is acceptable. General Bishop, my crew will go into our dropships while I wait for your boarding party. I wonder if you might do me a favor regarding your plans for my ship."
"A favor? What?"
"Give me a hint."
Valkyrie transited through the wormhole without incident and performed a short jump as soon as the ship was ready. We then waited quietly, listening with passive sensors for any hint that other ships might be in the area while the crew got some rest. There were echoes of old jump distortions. Based on how faint the signals were, Skippy tagged them as at least 6 days old. That was good. There were only 3 detectable objects in the area, exactly as we expected. The crew went to action stations, we verified everything was ready, and I gave the order to jump. The ship emerged less than 2 kilometers from a Maxalt relay station, and we didn't bother with any nonsense like pinging it with a false recognition signal or requesting to come aboard for authentication. Missiles were primed and launch doors before we jumped. A pair of hyperspeed missiles raced out of the tubes and we jumped again. Because the speed of light is so darn slow, we had to wait 14 seconds to see the photons of the twin explosions from 2 multi-megaton warheads. I think both of them were of Russian manufacture, if you're interested in trivia. What I cared about was that our nukes obliterated the relay station, leaving nothing but photons and radioactive high-speed debris. The speed of the debris was key to the whole operation. We had to hope the expanding wavefront of debris traveled past the 2 wormholes in the cluster before enemy starships came through. That cluster did not see a heavy load of traffic, and saw even less traffic now that the temporary alliance between the Theranin and Bosphorok had broken down into anger and shooting at each other, which really was inevitable when 2 hateful assholes are forced to work together. Anyway, the Maxalts could not know we had destroyed one of their relay stations, because we planned to replace it with a fake one. Not exactly a fake. The replacement was a real relay station, built and operated by the Kiddies, until it was abandoned after a wormhole shift left it inaccessible. That had been Sims's brilliant insight, and it was a great idea. Relay stations that had no contact with the Maxalts for centuries would still be using the old paired quantum state exchange system for authentication. That was the system we caused the Kiddies to abandon when they discovered we'd hacked into their secure communications. If we could replace an active station with one that we controlled, the Kiddies would happily upload all their top secret info there, blissfully ignorant that we had complete access. Even better, we would not absolutely need to go back to the fake station every time we wanted updated info. It was a fantastic idea, making me realize again how lucky I was that Valkyrie had such an excellent executive officer, and making me think that maybe Jennifer Sims should be in command of her own ship, instead of doing mostly administrative tasks for me. I needed to think about that. Okay, so, the operation was a lot more complicated than I hoped when Sims told me her concept. Finding an abandoned relay station was actually our second step. First, we had to decide which station to replace. It needed to see enough traffic that the data it contained was not so old as to be useless. It needed to be on a flight path used by Maxalt's military ships, so the station was getting the top-secret info we wanted and not news and gossip everyone knew about. The target station also needed to be automated, not having a crew or even space for an optional crew. We couldn't risk some jackass in the Maxalt's hegemony fleet personnel office deciding that some poor technicians needed a rotation working on a relay station and choosing ours. Yeah, doing that would make no sense. But mindless bureaucracy is one constant in the universe. Also, the station did not need to be identical to a station from 1,000 years ago. We could alter the replacement to look identical, but there was only so much alteration that was possible. Also, and this is key, the target station had to be in a Goldilocks location. No, I am not talking about the habitable zone of a star. I mean Goldilocks, like it had to be perfect for our purpose. Close enough to a wormhole so the particle wavefront of an explosion would wash past the wormhole within a few days. The idea was once the bubble of the explosion passed the wormhole, any starship coming through would just see empty space. Of course, if that ship jumped away from the wormhole and got ahead of the wavefront, it might detect the photons from where the original station used to be. So, we really needed a relay station that was between 2 wormholes of a cluster, and not just any cluster. It had to be a special type of cluster where the figure-8 tracks of the emergence points did not cover too much territory. The ideal location would have the span of both wormholes not being larger than 2 light days, and the target station had to be far enough from a habitable world or any other sensor platform so the light of the explosion wouldn't be seen there for a long time, hopefully years. Easy, right? No. Skippy ran all the data through his ginormous brain and came up with 2 possible targets. 2. The Maxalts had thousands of relay stations, and we would get only 2 chances to replace one with a fake. Scratch that. We would have only 1 chance. If we destroyed a station and the Kiddies noticed, they would be on alert and would carefully inspect all of their stations. We wouldn't get a second chance at the op. Crap. Just for once, I wish the merry band of pirates would catch a real break when we needed to do something super important. Hey, I'd be happy with a punch card where for every 10 impossible things we did, the universe gave us a freebie. I'm not holding my breath until that happens. Okay, we had two potential targets for destruction. The next step was finding an abandoned relay station to use as a replacement. It had to be of a configuration similar to the target, and it had to be so far from an active wormhole that no species had been there since it was abandoned. It also had to not be so old that we couldn't get it working again. Easy, right? Actually, it was not impossible. Skippy found 6 candidates. Then he discarded 2 because the dormant wormholes they were near were on local networks he had screwed with while he was moving around dormant wormholes. He didn't want to push his luck by asking those networks to do anything funky. He discarded 1 because it had been within 6 light years of a star that went nova, and that station's outer plating was slightly radioactive in a way he couldn't easily mask. He discarded 1 more because while it had been abandoned less than 200 years ago, it had been in service for more than 4,000 years. The surface of that station was likely so pitted with micrometeorite impacts, we would have to replace all the outer panels. That left only 2 candidates. I chose the one that would require the fewest jumps by our stolen star carrier, again, because I didn't want to push our luck. The high roller was in good condition according to Skippy's analysis, and a single relay station was not a major burden for it. Nothing should go wrong, but it sure as hell could. The superhero identity of Angry Joe was still no patience man, and I needed to remind myself that was a bad combination. We nuked the active relay station, and after making sure there was nothing left in the space where the station used to be, we jumped in. Valkyrie's big maser cannons were tuned to output a broad cone rather than the usual narrow, intense beam, and we fired the cannons all around us. The point was to push any lingering radioactive particles away at high speed. It took 6 hours to cover the entire sphere, a task that Bilby probably found to be deathly boring, though he never complained. Next, we jumped to rendezvous with the high roller, and Sims carefully guided that ship to the exact point where the original relay station used to be. The replacement station was released and set into position. Skippy verified the replacement station had their exact same set of recognition and authentication signals as the station we destroyed. When he was confident the Maxulks could not tell the station had been swapped for a fake, both of our ships jumped away. 5 days later, comfortably after the time when an arriving ship might have detected signs that the original station got nuked to dust, a Maxulk ship came through one of the wormholes. The old authentication procedure, which we ruined, was to allow the pixies on the ship and the station to establish a handshake, a relatively quick process. The new protocol was for passing a ship to match speed with the station, launch a dropship, and for a kitty to go aboard to get scanned. The rotten kitties had gotten used to the new routine. They launched the dropship soon after the ship jumped in, forcing the dropship to decelerate hard to avoid flying past the station. We crossed our fingers when the dropship docked with the station, and a kitty presumably went aboard. Skippy had fabricated a scanning booth that looked identical to a real one, but all it did was hum and flash some lights, then tell the kitty its identity and access codes were confirmed. At that point, if nothing went wrong, the ship transmitted its files to the station. The station replied with files both real and ones made up by Skippy. It worked. The kitty went back into the dropship, accelerated away to catch the ship, and their ship jumped away. Pumping a fist, I acknowledged the cheers of the bridge crew. Thank you. But the credit for this op belongs to Colonel Sims. Skippy, what have we got?
Don't be so impatient, Joe, he snapped. We are 4 light minutes away. My request signal hasn't even reached the station yet.
Right, sorry. We waited almost 8 minutes while photons slowly crawled to, then back from the station.
Success, Skippy crowed. Damn, I am good.
Anything interesting?
Give me a minute. There is a lot of data here.
Yep, okay. Wow. Well, the good news is our timing is excellent. If we got this data a week from now, it would be too late for us to act.
What's the bad news?
My greatest fear was the bad guys hit Earth again. We could not respond with our last set of relativistic darts. They were too few to do anything spectacular.
Joe, we got trouble. Big trouble.
Like, the display wasn't showing an immediate threat. A jump away from here right now threat? No, the threat is to the Legion, Joe. Hearing that, I relaxed just a bit. The Legion was always under some kind of threat. Okay, we'll deal with that when... We need to deal with it now, Joe. The kitties and spiders have sent ships to Clopeth. Holy. Clopeth was the op the Legion rolled into after they finished mopping up at Nickelback. How the hell did they know? Oh my... Did they hack our comms? No, he sighed. It's more simple than that. Something we should have... I should have anticipated. The senior species have enormous resources. They didn't have to guess where the Legion would strike next. They sent task forces to every potential target. 137 star systems have a combined Maxulk's Rindaloo task force waiting in stealth, and they started the initiative before we misaligned the wormhole that leads to Clopeth. Joe, the enemy was already waiting there when Zhao's ships jumped in with the Legion. They are all going to get slaughtered. Shepard!
On it, sir.
He tapped his console.
Course laid in for Clopeth. Ready.
He had a finger poised over the button to activate the jump drive. Wait. I held up a hand. We're not going straight to Clopeth. Shepard turned to look at me, as Sims did the same. We're not? He asked. No. A combined senior species force is too much for even Valkyrie. They could be trying for a twofer. Knock out the Legion and capture this ship with Skippy. Sims asked the question that was on everyone's mind. Then what's the plan, sir? The bad guys are probably expecting one hell of a gunfight. And? We need to bring something bigger than a gun. Chapter 34. Valkyrie jumped in 10 light minutes from Clopeth. 10 minutes was not a magic number chosen for some scientific reason. It just felt right. Close enough to give us a reasonably current view of events, far enough away in distance that the enemy would have difficulty covering the entire area to search for us. By comparison, Earth is about 8 light minutes from the sun, so it is a long way on any human scale. Damn it. I softly pounded a fist on the command chair's armrest. I never thought I would see that. The holographic main display was showing an image of the planet surrounded by symbols representing starships. Blue for friendly and allied ships, red for Maxulk's, yellow for client ships of the Maxulk's coalition, and green for the Rindaloo. There were a depressing number of green symbols in the display. The spiders were there, and they were not fighting their ancient enemy. The two apex species also were not holding hands around a campfire. They did not trust each other. They were working together to achieve a common goal, crushing humanity. No, that's not accurate. They were trying to stop us from having any influence on the galaxy, to halt our progress toward finally ending the endless war, to prevent their coalitions from breaking up, to keep their privileged positions by making their unwilling clients fight for them. Shit. I felt cold, sick, lost. Based on the faces of the bridge crew, everyone else was feeling the same. They could. I didn't have that luxury. The commander has to be calm and cool and to have a plan, no matter how badly the odds were against us. The crew couldn't see how scared I was. Faking it is a major part of the command skill set. Unbuckling my seat restraints, I stood up and took a step toward the display, acting like I wanted a better look so I could decide exactly how to kick ass. Skippy, what are they saying to each other? I don't suppose there's any chance the spiders are trying to get the kiddies to sign up for a timeshare. Ha! No such luck, unfortunately. They are not talking to each other much at all. The spiders are instructing, demanding the Jirapta and Ruhar to stand down, to cease all aid and support of our fleet and the ships of the Verdkris. The rotten kitties are dealing directly with Admiral Zhao. They are demanding he surrender. Joe, our navy has no chance in this fight. There are 17 Maxulks and 9 Rindaloo warships. Even if Valkyrie joined the fight, Zhao's ships would still get slaughtered. Right. Where's the Dutchman? In stealth, at a distance of 13 light seconds. The senior species do not appear to have detected the Dutchman. Signal Chang to join us out here. 10 minutes later, the familiar profile of the Flying Dutchman appeared. Kong, I asked, is the situation as bad as it looks? The fleet is caught in a damping field and can't get away. The Maxulks use precision fire to disable Pacific's jump drive and primary reactionless engines, so Zhao's not going anywhere.
We lost 4 destroyers in the initial engagement. I think the kiddies were only making a point about how vulnerable we are. They could have taken out every ship we have. The Dandrindaloo also fired on our ships. They disabled the Congo.
Oh, I felt a chill creep up my spine. Up until that moment, I had been hoping the spiders would do their usual neutral, passive-aggressive thing. The fact that they shot at our ships completely changed the game.
Fuck!
Yes. Whatever we're going to do, we'll have to fight both sides. Joe, do you have a plan?
Sort of.
Sort of?
Yeah. Kong, I need you to stay out here. I'm sending Skippy over on a dropship.
As I said that, I saw our ready bird launch, carrying the beer can away.
Chang saw the same. I saw him glance at his own display.
We'll take care of Skippy. What will you be doing?
I'm taking Valkyrie in.
He squinted at me with a frown.
That is suicide. Without Skippy, you can't hope to win a fight. Even with him, we're not going to fight. We're going to negotiate a surrender.
Our mighty battlecruiser, without a certain snarky beer can aboard, jumped in less than 300,000 kilometers from where the UN Navy was concentrated. After the Dutchman jumped away, a pair of Maxolk's destroyers had jumped to that position to investigate the gamma ray source. The rest of the Apex species ships were in 2 clusters, on either side of our Navy. The main display told me that the Rindaloo and Maxolk's had their main weapons pointed at each other, with secondary batteries tasked to prevent any rash move by the human ships. Valkyrie's arrival upset the tactical stalemate. Our shields were up, but weapons offline. A message broadcast in every useful language stated that we were there to talk, and please would everyone not shoot at us. Instantly, we had a half dozen, a dozen, then most of the Apex species ships make short jumps to surround us. Zhao's ships were forgotten, although they were still trapped in a damping field and within weapons range. All parties wanted to speak with me at once, including Admiral Zhao. With one eye on the clock in the lower left corner of the display, I counted the enemy ships around us.
13 kitty ships on the right, 7 spiders on the left, I muttered to myself.
Straightening up, I lifted my chin, trying to give myself some dignity while I sold us out. Behind me, while I talked under my breath, the officer at the comms station made an adjustment to her console and jammed the transmit button down with a thumb. On the bottom right corner of the main display, an urgent light was blinking. Zhao was demanding to speak with me.
Sims, I told her quietly. Signal Zhao to stand by. I'll talk with him when I can.
My executive officer grimaced while she tapped on her touchscreen keyboard, anticipating a fun conversation with a very unhappy and very senior officer. She could handle it. I stood and faced the virtual camera lens. It could capture a view from almost any angle. We primitive monkeys found it easier when there was a focal point, so the image of a lens floated between me and the display.
This is General Bishop. I wish to speak with the leader of the Maxolk's forces here.
The response was immediate, because the enemy had been demanding to speak with me since the moment we jumped in.
You wish to surrender, Bishop?
The transmission was audio only, and the voice had the slightly stereotypical hiss of a cat speaking. That might have been an effect added by our translator software. It knew we thought of the Maxolk's as cat-like.
I wish to discuss terms for surrender, I stressed.
Very well.
The kitty practically purred, satisfied with herself.
We are willing to negotiate.
What about your counterparts? Do the Rindaloo want to negotiate?
We do,
came a different and unfamiliar voice.
Great. I bit my lower lip. Everyone wants to negotiate.
I looked down at the list on my tablet.
Our conditions are...
I took a breath.
First, that you release all United Nations Navy ships to be withdrawn to a neutral...
Hey, remember those relativistic darts we hadn't used yet?
Yeah, we brought one with us.
I was going to bring chips and dip to the party, but Sims said that parties always have plenty of snacks, so we should bring something really special instead. Before Valkyrie jumped in to begin negotiations, Chang took Skippy and the Dutchman farther away from Klopeth to rendezvous with a relativistic dart. As the dart zipped past the Dutchman, Skippy sent it a burst of commands. He instructed the dart to perform one final jump, using its own drive. It emerged in a burst of gamma rays 1,300 kilometers behind Valkyrie and zipped right past us before we knew it was there. The short jump, programmed by Skippy, was extremely precise, even by his standards. Once the dart was safely in front of us, it flew onward only 80 kilometers before it exploded. Darts are made of an ultra-dense exotic material specially created by the Maxalts. That material is actually a tightly packed collection of what might best be described as BB pellets. In the military, we call those submunitions. What I call it is awesome. The signal from Valkyrie caused the explosive charge at the center of the dart to detonate in a very specific pattern, breaking the dart into 40 ultra-dense chunks. 40, like two for each of the enemy ships around us. The dart emerged less than half a light second from us, traveling at almost three-quarters the speed of light. You can run the numbers if you want. The result is that the targeted ships had just more than a tenth of a second to realize they had incoming and react. The AIs of Maxalts, and especially Rindaloo ships, are incredibly fast. You know what's faster? A chunk of relativistic dart blasting a hole through an AI's freaking brain. It's hard for a starship's AI to think when its substrate gets turned into superheated plasma in a flash. The energy shields, point defense cannons, and armor plating of those ships were laughably inadequate against an object packing that much kinetic energy. Even later, watching a replay in super slow motion, it was hard to see the enemy ships actually being struck. One moment, the enemy warships were hanging motionless around us, bristling with weapons that were all aimed at Valkyrie. The next moment, those ships had blindingly bright streaks radiating away from them, streaks that were thousands of kilometers long, smashing through the armored ships like tissue paper. The chunks of dart had barely slowed down. Behind them, ships staggered, then exploded. Valkyrie shook, the ship's shields overloaded by the hellish energy unleashed all around us. We couldn't go anywhere. There wasn't anywhere to go. The ship got battered by the two wavefronts of exploding ships, and although explosions in space don't have anything to push against, there was enough high-speed whatever flying around to seriously scorch the outer layer of our armor. To sell the idea of me attempting to negotiate until the last second, I was standing in front of my chair when all hell broke loose. With no time to get strapped in and the deck heaving like Valkyrie was in a hurricane, I did a stop, drop, and roll. Like, stop talking, drop to the deck as it came up to meet me halfway, and rolled while tucking my head under my hands for protection. Someone grabbed hold of my right arm and yanked me toward my chair as I bounced off the deck, bashing a hand on something I couldn't see. The roaring stopped as abruptly as it began, the wavefronts having washed over us.
Bill,
I coughed while Sims helped me crawl into my chair.
Bilby, status? Oh, wow. Dude, we're in one piece, mostly. Jump drive and normal space engines are offline. I had to shut down a reactor. It's too hot. Hey, I'm like all for new experiences and broadening our minds, you know, but can we not ever do that again? No promises.
I tried to snort a laugh and spit blood all over my uniform top. Somewhere I'd gotten a nosebleed. No, my nose hurt. Must have bashed it on something. The main display was filling in details, and I managed a smile when I looked at Sims.
Two on the right, one on the left.
Skippy's aim had not been perfect. The enemy ships had been maneuvering, and the dart had a limited ability to project fragments sideways, especially at such short range. Pushing up out of my chair, because I hadn't learned a lesson the first time, I checked that our weapons were now online, shields were recovering, and most important, our damping field was saturating the area. Zhao's ships had also gotten pelted by high-speed debris, but the reason why we jumped in 300,000 kilometers away from their formation was to give them some measure of protection. By the time the debris wavefront expanded over that distance, it had thinned out a lot. The display was showing a lot of yellow and some orange as Zhao's ships reported additional damage, but no red that would indicate serious effects. Our ships had survived, and the remaining enemy ships weren't going anywhere.
Hey, I said on an open channel. Anybody else want to negotiate?
The reply was an outraged scream. My knowledge of unintelligible alien curses was limited. I couldn't tell which species was angry with me. The scream resolved into something like speech.
You have no honor.
That voice I recognized as Maxalts, including the underlying hiss.
You offer to surrender, then you attack.
Hey, I never said we were surrendering. That got silence. Hello? I pretended to knock on a door.
Lies!
The unnamed Max Salt's voice screeched. You implied... Hey, whoever you are, it's not my fault if you assumed the wrong thing. All I said was I wanted to discuss a surrender. Yours.
You destroyed our ships.
Yeah, well, I shrugged. It's easier to negotiate when one side doesn't have overwhelming force. The display showed one of the two crippled Max Salt ships was beginning to turn away and was firing up its sputtering main engines. Webs, I turned to look at Mamay behind me. It looks like someone is trying to leave the party. Check, Mamay said as a reply, because that's what artillery people say instead of yes. He sent a pair of railgun projectiles ripping through the enemy ship, and it stopped accelerating, drifting slowly away. That incident is an interesting example of why armor plating can sometimes be a hazard to the ship it is designed to protect. If that ship didn't have armor, our railgun darts would have blasted cleanly through the hull, leaving small entry and exit holes with limited carnage in between. Instead, when our two darts encountered armor plating, they instantly flashed into burning jets of plasma. Knowing that could happen, the Maxalt shipbuilders had installed plates of reactive explosives under the armor to erupt outward and disperse the plasma. Great idea, and it usually works. Except in this case, we fired from so close, and our darts came in at such high speed, they almost punched right through the reactive plates before they could, you know, react. The plasma flared out in two cone-shaped jets inside the ship, causing damage that was far more widespread and serious than if our railguns had simply punched neat holes through the hull. This time, the law of unintended consequences worked in our favor. The one damaged Rindaloo ship signaled for my attention.
Human, you have made another enemy today.
You shot at us first, asshole, so fuck you, I snapped. Instantly regretting my choice of words. Diplomacy, Joe, I reminded myself. Ah, screw it. Diplomacy hadn't gotten us anywhere. The senior species only respond to force.
Your species cannot be trusted with elder weapons.
We don't plan to use them unless you are stupid enough to use them first.
My people would never resort to deploying such weapons of mass destruction.
The last time the elder weapons were used, the Maxalts say you hit them first.
They lie!
The spider raised its voice for the first time, or the translator just then started adding inflection to the audio.
The treacherous Max Salks foolishly attacked us, and their arrogance nearly destroyed us both.
Yeah, they say the same thing about you. You know what? I don't care whether Han or Greedo shot first a long, long time ago. You have nothing to fear from us now. Leave us alone, and we won't mess with you. But that's not going to happen, is it? You're not only afraid we will use our elder weapons, you are also afraid that humanity offers a better alternative to your clients. If they ally with us, they won't have to fight endless wars for you for your benefit. You and the Maxalts give orders from the rear, and your clients on the front lines die. Nothing changes, except the lines on the map move side to side, I said, realizing too late that I was paraphrasing a Pink Floyd song. Hopefully the spiders would not research that reference. Damn it. Arguing with the spiders or the kiddies was a waste of time. We just wiped out six of your ships without our ship actually firing a shot. You don't have a defense against the weapons we have. We can hit you anytime, anywhere. If you don't believe me, ask your enemies. Or are the Maxalts your allies now? There was a pause when the spider didn't reply. I was about to switch to talking with the Maxalts, who were screaming at me, when the spider spoke again.
We are familiar with the weapon you used against us here. We know they are not your weapons.
Yeah, well, they are now. We control them. Those darts are our weapons.
It is useless to debate the issue of ownership. You should be aware that our most sensitive worlds are protected from relativistic impactors, so any threat by you to use such weapons against us is...
Yeah, we know about kinetic energy dispersal fields. The Maxalts had one around Argothus, and it didn't do them any good. We hit Argothis with 6 impactors and cracked that freaking world like an eggshell. So don't give us any bullshit about how your worlds are protected, because that is an empty threat. Speaking of empty threats, I had a flash of inspiration to follow up with a bullshit threat of my own. We're using the Maxulk's own darts against them as a way to say screw you to those assholes. And because we have even more powerful weapons in reserve that we don't want to deploy yet. The spider chuckled. Well, that is what it sounded like through the translator. Whoever was on the other side of the conversation was one cool customer. He or she was aboard a damaged starship, saw us wipe out 6 other Rindaloo ships, and still was laughing at me.
You are a young, primitive, and impulsive species, so we are not insulted by your foolish boasting. Humans have no such weapons. To suggest you do is...
Hey, pal, I got a breaking news flash for you. Somebody busted an Elder wormhole, remember? That was us primitive monkeys. We captured several Maxulk's capital ships, and we did that before we had an arsenal of Elder weapons. If you're going to talk trash, make sure you know what the hell you're talking about, dipshit. There was a sigh, like the spider was being patient with a child. That pissed me off. More than anything, the Rindaloo spoke aloud.
General Bishop, the arrangements between my people and the Maxulks have kept the peace in this galaxy for
peace! I lost whatever cool I had left. It was unprofessional, but that bus had already left the station. Tell that to the billions, maybe trillions of people who died to keep you comfortably in power. You have kept this war going, forcing your clients to fight, so... Clenching my fists at my side, I stopped to bite my lip. Getting righteously outraged felt good. It wasn't helping me accomplish anything useful. I'm done talking with you. I'm going to talk to you and the Maxulks. Both of you have 1 hour, Earth time, to pull crews off any of your ships that aren't flight-worthy and jump away from here. At the end of 1 hour, we will destroy any senior species ships remaining in this system. If you activate weapons, we shoot. If you delay, we shoot. If you think bad thoughts in our direction, we shoot. The only reason you are alive right now is because I need you to carry a message back to your people, and I don't need more than one of your ships to do that. The message is, we're bringing the pain. We brought it here, we brought it to Ratanavir, we brought it to Argothis, and we brought it to Lacandra. So far, we have not targeted Rindaloo worlds, but that is over. If you fire on a human ship again, or you fire on a ship of any species that is working with us, or you interfere with our operations, we will rain hellfire on your worlds. You can't stop us, and you know it. Don't bother replying, because we're not listening. With a thumb, I made a slashing gesture across my throat, and the audio feed cut out. Sir? Sims cleared her throat. What chapter was that from in the Bishop Manual of Interstellar Diplomacy?
Ha! I snorted. It's in the section about punching bullies in the throat. Talking with them is a waste of time. They only listen to force.
She nodded. We should make sure Admiral Zhao understands your offer of a 1 hour ceasefire, she said with a raised eyebrow. I got her meaning. Technically, Zhao was in command of the human force in that star system. I had made the offer without clearing it with him. In my defense, we didn't have time for a lot of blah 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 back and forth discussion.
Good point. Turning to face the virtual camera, I straightened my shoulders. Connect me with...
Just then, the Flying Dutchman jumped in, a mere 200 kilometers off our starboard bow. I changed my mind. I need to talk with Chang first. Exo, contact Zhao, in case he didn't get my message. Tell him... No, please, request that he not shoot at the enemy for another hour. Also that I suggest he disperse his ships. I added, in case the enemy also had some type of super weapon. The Rindaloo and Maxulks meekly pulled survivors off their damaged ships. Or maybe they were seething with rage as they pulled survivors off their ships. I really didn't give a shit how they felt about it. Their last ship jumped away 6 minutes before my 1 hour deadline. Zhao assigned the cruisers Nile and Ishikari to escort the bad guys toward the nearest Elder Wormhole to make sure neither of our enemies doubled back to cause mischief. The Admiral made that decision without consulting me. Not that he needed to ask me how to deploy his ships. If he had asked me, I would have argued against assigning an escort, but Zhao needed to think about his overall force, and it was his call. Skippy came back aboard Valkyrie, and the Dutchman jumped away again to lurk in stealth as a guard force. Zhao wanted to confer with me, Ross, and Perkins, so I flew a Panther down to the surface to pick up Perkins, while Ross flew directly to the flagship. When I say I flew a Panther, I was not at the controls. We were not entirely sure the shooting had stopped, and I was not yet qualified to fly a Panther in combat mode. Plus, Emily Perkins and I had a lot to talk about before we reached the flagship. Coffee? I asked as Perkins came in through the dropship side door. No. She shook her head, knowing it was difficult to hear with the ship's turbines idling. As soon as she strapped in and the door slid closed, the Panther leapt off the ground, flying straight up under hard acceleration. I knew we broke the local sound barrier when the roaring of the engines became a muffled whisper. Your thoughts? I asked. She looked tired, but no more than I expected after 3 straight days of combat. Turning down an offer of fresh coffee told me she was probably on some sort of stimulants. That, plus her fingers drummed nervously on her right thigh. I know we have one hell of a mess here. Sir, she just shook her head again. I'm out. Of ideas, I mean. They called our bluff. Yeah, they did. I knew what she meant. Emily Perkins thought long term, and she thought big. To her, there was no point to developing strategy unless it was part of an overall grand strategy. The UNEF senior leadership on Paradise was not providing any actual leadership, so Perkins filled the vacuum. She was not the only staff officer to develop a plan, and her plans stole from ideas cooked up by others. But that is just good teamwork. The reason she was able to actually put a plan into action is the Ruha respected her more than they respected most humans, which is not saying a lot. Because of her actions to blow a Kristang battle group out of orbit, to prevent lizard commandos from destroying passenger ships over Paradise and alerting the hamsters to the threat of a bioweapon attack against that planet, she became popular with the Ruha public. The strategy she proposed had been kicking around UNEF headquarters for a while, going nowhere because the Ruha were not interested. But when she spoke, the hamster authorities listened, even if they were just showing their public that they treated one of the famous mavericks with respect. What the Ruha military wanted Perkins to do was publicity tours, where she would praise humanity's landlords and not do anything to cause complications. Emily Perkins had no interest in being a puppet. The original plan was intended to solve 2 problems, one immediate and one more likely only aspirational. Remember, the Alien Legion concept was launched only shortly after the hamsters tried to trade Paradise back to the lizards and sell out the human population there. UNEF HQ was desperate to demonstrate that humans were no threat to the Ruha, that we could be useful. By doing the dirty jobs the Ruha military didn't want, we hoped the Legion could make the still skeptical hamster authorities see the value in supporting a group of troublesome and primitive aliens. That part of the plan worked, maybe too well. Exposing the treachery and double-dealing of the Ruha on Fresno had caused their federal government to fall, creating chaos. The fact that humans had not done anything wrong didn't matter. Plenty of powerful people in the hamster government were pissed off that a small group of disobedient humans had caused so much trouble. The Legion got a second chance at Squid World and barely survived that operation. The reason the Legion got approval for the action at Tomarin was the Ruha military was horribly embarrassed about their massive intelligence failure at Squid World and wanted the Legion to keep quiet about it. Anyway, the first part of Perkins' plan worked well enough. The Alien Legion had proven its worth and raised the profile of humans throughout the galaxy. The second part of her original plan, the part that was more of a goal than an actual plan, was to free Earth from the Kristang. Both of her original plans were OBE when she learned about the Merry Band of Pirates. Her new plan, the one she told me about before she briefed UNEF Command on Earth, was to begin the process of breaking clients away from their patrons. To do that, we needed to prevent the 2 senior species from punishing clients who refused orders to fight. To do that, we had to demonstrate that humans could protect anyone who helped us, like when the Giraptor delivered a batch of secondhand starships to us. UNEF Command agreed with the basic concept Perkins proposed, but they wanted to move slowly and cautiously. The problem with plans is the enemy also makes plans. The attacks against Earth changed everything. Instead of gradually encouraging the Jurapta and Ruha to work with us, we had to move fast. That's why we couldn't wait for the Ruha to give the Verdcris a chance only a little bit at a time. We had to force the issue. Now the senior species had called our bluff. We could not actually protect anyone who signed an alliance with us. We couldn't even protect our own navy. All the work done to build a new alien legion would be for nothing if potential allies feared they would be attacked by higher-tech species and their new human allies wouldn't protect them. The future of the Legion and any future alliances rested on our ability to force the Maxulks to clean up the cloud at Earth. So far, I had failed to make the Maxulks do anything. So far, all I had done was make matters worse. The Rindaloo were now taking direct action against us. No, that's not true. The situation is even worse than me getting the two senior species to join forces against us. It also told them that, despite my boasting, we didn't have any super weapons of our own. That's why we hacked into their super weapons. We had already hit the enemy as hard as we could. They had to decide whether to continue taking punishment, but they didn't need to worry that we would make the pain any worse. Hooray for me! In the past, my failure to accomplish the mission would have gotten me depressed and doubting myself. The new Angry Joe just got more angry. Perkins and I had a lot to talk about during the ride up. "This isn't going to work," she said, which is basically what she said before. She was prompting me to say something. "It hasn't worked yet," I argued. "We hit them hard already, showed that we can penetrate their defenses." She didn't ask how we had gotten through the enemy defenses. That information needed to be kept to a limited group of people. Even aboard Valkyrie, fewer than a dozen people knew how we accomplished that task. If the crew were captured, most of them wouldn't have any useful information. It sucks that I had to consider the crew being captured and interrogated, but that's our reality. Skippy promised me he hadn't put dangerous quantum nanomachines in the brains of the crew, and the remaining ones in my head were deactivated. I know from painful experience that no amount of SEER training could prevent aliens from learning anything they wanted by probing a human brain. I still have nightmares about that. "I know what you're thinking," I said when she didn't reply. "We proved we can hit them anywhere, and the kiddies still aren't rushing to clean up the cloud. Don't worry. We hit their toughest target, but we haven't hit them hard yet. That's our next move." "We can't escalate," she stated. "Sir, that solar flare was already too much. You crossed the line." I know. That was true. The Maxulks were going to slowly freeze our homeworld, and they had goaded their clients into direct strikes. But those strikes were limited, and the Maxulks had not yet directly killed anyone on Earth. If the merry band of pirates attacked a populated world with relativistic weapons, the enemy might step up their own campaign in response. Whatever we did next, we couldn't make the situation worse. Like I already had. "We have a variety of options to step up the pressure."
"How many of those super speed darts have you captured?"
Not enough, I admitted, and told her how the Maxulks had self-destructed their own arsenal of super weapons to deny their use to us. "We have a few left, not enough. Listen, we'll think of something. Using those darts was kind of a convenient shortcut for us. Without them?" I shrugged. "We'll have to do it the hard way."
"I hope you can, General, because until you force the senior species to back down," she pointed to the deck beneath our feet, "we're shut down. The Legion. We can't operate in this environment. We can't ask our people and the Verds and the Ruhar to continue operations with the threat of a Maxulks task force jumping in over our heads without warning. Unless you plan for Valkyrie to follow us across the galaxy."
"No." She wasn't suggesting that our mighty battlecruiser join the fleet, just pointing out that would be the only way the Legion could have any level of protection against the enemy. "That wouldn't work anyway. The Maxulks would just send more ships next time. We can't destroy every ship they have.
In the future, they won't conveniently cluster their ships close together either," she noted.
"Yeah." We knew that our neat trick of using a dart to take out multiple ships would likely be a one-time event. The enemy would learn from that mistake and avoid providing a convenient target. Also, if the kiddies know Valkyrie is operating with the Legion, that will make you a more tempting target. No, you're right, the Legion is shut down for now. I'm going to recommend that Admiral Zhao take the fleet back to Jaguar for a refit while we... Perkins shook her head.
He won't do it. No way will Zhao let the fleet sit out the fight and do nothing. We also can't leave the Verds hung out to dry. Their worlds will be targets for every ambitious group of aliens in the galaxy without the First Fleet's protection.
Shit, you're right.
We brought the Verds into this fight. If we abandon them at the first sign of trouble, we can forget about others signing on to be allies.
Chapter 35.
Sir, Sims said when I came back from the conference with Perkins, Ross, and Zhao aboard Pacific. This goes over our heads. We need revised instructions from Earth.
No.
Sir, she added a bit of emphasis to the word that time. We tried. We gave it a damn good shot. The Maxulks outplayed us. Without more than a handful of darts, we can't force the Maxulks to disperse the cloud. We already hit them with a solar flare. Anything Valkyrie can do in the future will have less impact than a solar flare, and their public will not be impressed. They won't feel threatened by us.
Sims is correct. Smythe stared at his tablet as if hoping the answer was there. They did call our bluff.
It wasn't a bluff, I protested. He raised an eyebrow at me.
You would use another solar flare, this time against a heavily populated, undefended world?
No, I admitted. Despite the tough guy pep talks I gave myself about how I would save Earth no matter what it took, I could not see myself burning an entire world. Also, Sims wouldn't let me do it, and Skippy wouldn't help if I asked him to do that.
Then it was a bluff, our star team leader said quietly. It doesn't matter now. We can't bluff when the enemy knows we don't have any cards.
Shit! I pounded the desk with the side of a fist. Damn it! We had a plan. It should have worked. Neither of them said anything. When the commander is engaged in ineffectual whining, it is best to let him get it out of his system.
Does anyone have any ideas?
I asked, trying to keep the note of desperation from being too obvious. Smythe sat back in his chair.
Unless Skippy has tricks we haven't used yet.
Hey!
The Avatar appeared immediately.
Don't blame me. You monkeys cook up the wacky ideas. I just make them work. Joe?
No, sorry. I can't think of anything else.
Those darts were perfect.
What about Plan B? Smythe asked.
Plan B?
If we can't force the Maxulks to disperse the cloud, is there other action we can take?
Like what?
Like, Sims spoke up.
Go back to doing what we're best at. Sneaky shit. Can we start a fight between the two senior species?
Whoa, was my reaction. Bloody trick, that.
Smythe frowned, but he looked like the wheels in his head were turning. They're cooperating against us now. That's our major problem, Sims continued. We know they don't trust each other. If they both have ships at the negotiation site, and there is an...
She looked at Smythe, then me.
Unfortunate incident.
She didn't bother to finish the thought. A page from our playbook, eh? Smythe mused. We tried that once, attacking a ship to disrupt negotiations.
He meant when we faked attacking a Ruha ship during the Black Op when we ended up sparking a civil war among the Kristang.
As I recall, it failed. The Ruha returned to the negotiations.
Nah, I grunted, unconvinced.
Nice idea, Sims, but that might have worked before either side knew we were flying around doing sneaky shit. Now, I shrugged. They'll be on guard for disruptions. And they'll assume any unfortunate incident was our doing before they start blaming the other side.
Exo, I added when she frowned, hurt. Work up a plan and I'll look at it. I certainly was not in a position to shoot down ideas when I had nothing to offer. Staring at the message on Smythe's tablet was not giving me any inspiration.
What's our next move, sir? Smythe asked, prompting me to blink and tear my eyes away from the taunting message.
Shit. Accepting the offer was the worst thing humanity could do. Except not accepting the offer and allowing Earth to freeze while nuclear-armed nations fought over dwindling resources.
Next, I don't know.
My brain was having trouble focusing. Zhao requested the Dutchman to remain here while the Legion is evac'd off the surface and he pulls his ships out. He will have to bring the Star Carriers into the system. Too many of our ships can't jump without major repairs. And while they do that, Damn it, I hated being indecisive. We're going to hit up a relay station. I want fresh intel on how broad this alliance is between the Kitties and Spiders. Is what they did here a one-time thing, or are they cooperating all across the galaxy? Sims, signal Zhao that we're jumping away. To take my mind off the latest major crushing burden on my shoulders, I wandered down to use one of the flight simulators. It would be good to keep my skills current. I was qualified for basic maneuvers in a Panther, but not combat flying. With everything going on, I simply hadn't been able to devote enough time to advanced flight training. And the simulators were mostly busy being used by real pilots. I couldn't justify cutting ahead in the line. That's why I was up at 3 in the morning. That, plus I couldn't sleep. After waking up, trying and failing to get back to sleep for an hour, I got out of bed. A quick status check showed 3 of the flight simulators were not in use, so I hurried to get there, and was met by disappointment. Skippy, what the hell? Joe? He acted like he was surprised to see me out of bed at that hour. What are you doing up so early? I couldn't sleep. Why do you throw a hissy fit when I wake you up in the middle of the night, but somehow it's okay for you to bother me at this ungodly hour? I never throw a hissy fit, and you don't sleep, you moron. Moron? Sorry, it's been a long day and a long week. I know what you mean, homeboy. He sighed. Crap, sometimes this just feels like a long life, you know? Yeah, sorry about that. Why are you sorry? If you weren't with us, with me, maybe your life wouldn't be so freaking frustrating. It also wouldn't be as challenging, interesting, and fun, Joe. We did have some fun along the way, right? I guess so, I said as I stifled a yawn. It's hard to think about good times in the dark hours of the night. At the time, sure. I'm sorry to rain on your parade. It feels like any fun we had was like enjoying a good dinner aboard a train that is headed off a cliff. Wow, you are Debbie Downer this morning. What happened to Angry Joe? I'm too tired to be pissed off right now. Hey, what's going on with the simulators? I hurried down here because 3 of them showed as available, but I pointed to the blank displays of the simulator in front of me. They're all busted? They are not busted, Joe. Maintenance, then? That should have been noted on the schedule, so not maintenance either. That does go on the schedule if you were paying attention. Then why can't I use this one? Because it is running a self-diagnostic, which you should know if you studied the manuals. See the little self-check icon in the upper right of the primary flight display? Oh, yes. I blinked, my eyes still dry from waking up too early. So it is busted. No, it's... Okay, yes, technically it does have a fault, but that is something I did on purpose. You screwed it up on purpose. Why did... I'm trying to explain, knucklehead. You monkeys keep bitching about... His voice took on a whiny tone. How you need to understand how the ship works and be able to fix things by yourselves. Ugh! You broke the simulator to see if we could fix it? You ass. I broke it to see if it could figure out what is wrong by itself. That is the first step you monkeys should take if a piece of equipment is not working properly and Bilby or I are not there to fix it. Well, sure. So the check engine light is on? It's way more complicated than that. The change I made is very subtle. It will be difficult for the machine's native AI to determine... Okay, fine. When can I use it? Can the diagnostic software run in the background? No, you numbskull. The simulator's operation must be static while the diagnostic routine is running. Jeez, I tried to help you monkeys and all I get is complaints. Joe, any advanced AI-driven system needs to... Huh. What? Shut up a minute. I'm thinking. Is that what you call it? He laughed. Shut up. That time he actually went quiet. After a moment, I leaned back against the bulkhead and said slowly, Skippy, I have a question for you. It didn't take long for Sims to contact me. Like, she must have pinged me within 5 minutes after she woke up. Being a good executive officer, she checked the status report in a tablet and saw right away that the ship had changed course overnight. Sir? She asked via Z-phone while I was in my office. We're not going to a relay station? No, we're not. We're on our way to the negotiating site, after we run a couple errands along the way. Sir? The message to UNEF Command said the senior species would be waiting at a rendezvous site they designated to discuss their demands. We're going there. You, she said slowly, trying to guess my intentions. Intend to negotiate, sir? If we're offering concessions, we really need to clear that with you, Nefkamet.
No concessions, I laughed bitterly. It will be a one-way negotiation, kind of a win-lose deal. We win, they lose. We're going to make them an offer they can't refuse.
Did I, miss something? She was bewildered by the sudden, unexplained change. No, I had a thought a couple hours ago. Sims, we are going to make the Maxalts clean up their damned mess. Them and the spiders. The damned lazy Rindaloo are not sitting on the sidelines anymore. You found more darts?
No, that's over. This is the end game in this whole damned war. The senior species will clean up their mess and leave us alone, or we will break their fucking empires, burn them to the ground. They will lose everything.
You, she dragged out the word, have a plan to do that?
Yes. Skippy and I worked out the details last night. Meet me in the galley? I haven't had breakfast yet. I'll get Smythe to join us.
I'll be there in 5 minutes. Sims, there's no rush. The ship won't jump again for another...
I checked the status on the bulkhead display.
31 minutes. It's a long way to the rendezvous point, and like I said, we have some errands to do first. Take your time. Are you sure?
She had to be burning with curiosity.
Yes. Besides, the galley crew is making biscuits this morning, and they won't be out of the oven for another 20 minutes. I'll be there in 15. The site for designated negotiations was unusual. By the way, I'm putting air quotes around the word negotiations because the senior species were not interested in actually negotiating with us. That's fine with me. Negotiations involve talking. I was done with talking. Anyway, I said the location was unusual because it wasn't a planet or a space station or a lonely random spot in interstellar space. It was a wormhole cluster. Not just any wormhole cluster. This was a place where three wormholes came together with their emergence points always in a bubble a quarter light year across. Ships coming in through one wormhole had to make only a few jumps before they could transit outbound through another wormhole. The timing could be tricky. The three wormholes coordinated their emergence points in space, but not in time. Even ships capable of making a quarter light year jump could not just zip through to their destination. They had to wait for the outbound wormhole to emerge. The patterns of emergence were also far more complex than the typical wormhole. Most wormholes had a static pattern of emergence points, a pattern that might run to huge numbers, but that had been mapped over the millennia and was well known to every starfaring species in the galaxy. Clusters were different. Mapping their emergence points was like playing three-dimensional chess. The emergence of one wormhole in a cluster varied based on where and when another wormhole in the cluster emerged. After observing the pattern since the beginning of their starflight capability, the Rindaloo were still occasionally surprised when wormholes in a cluster acted differently from what the spiders expected. Another funky thing about that cluster was that one wormhole connected deep inside Rindaloo territory, one to the heart of Maxalt's territory, and one just inside Maxalt space near their border with the spiders. That is why the two ancient enemies often chose that point to meet, on the rare occasions when they needed to talk. It made sense they would choose to designate that location for possible talks with humans. Why am I babbling on about trivia? Because, despite my tough talk, I was nervous. Like, I made sure to use the bathroom right before we slipped through one of the wormholes. Because all three wormholes emerged within a sphere a quarter light year across, it was one of a very few places in the galaxy where it was possible to set up a blockade. We could come through an event horizon into a firestorm of directed energy, kinetic, nuclear, or more exotic weapons. So, we cheated. Skippy discovered, to our dismay and his extreme irritation, that none of the three wormholes would allow him to screw with them. He could not conveniently make one emerge half a light year away, no matter how much he argued with the network AI. It seems Skippy's reputation had spread across the galaxy, and he wasn't being allowed to take actions that might disrupt the operation of the network. But what he could do was instruct the network to set up an emergence within the insanely complicated parameters of its programming, an emergence location that was not expected by the asshole kitties and spiders who might be waiting to blast Valkyrie and capture Skippy. Ready? I asked, squeezing the armrest of the command chair to settle my nerves. Remember, I told myself, I am a badass, filled with well-deserved confidence. I had no doubt my strategy would work. That show was for the crew's benefit, and indirectly for the aliens whose asses we were about to kick. Or not. It's complicated.
Ready, Freddy?
Skippy replied with a nervous giggle. It did not make me happy to hear he was also nervous. Sims gave me a side eye. I responded by flashing a thumbs up to her. Relax, my thumb said. Everything's under control, no problems anticipated. Well, no more than usual. My thumb was lying, like a rug. But Sims didn't know that, so it's all good. On the bottom left corner of the main display, the big 3D hologram in the front center of the bridge, a clock was counting down. Sims and several others had asked about that counter. I'd casually explained that it represented the optimal time for Skippy to, well, do what he does best. Be awesome. I was lying about that, too. I suck. Before we arrived at the location of the wormhole that was soon to appear in front of Valkyrie, we ran some errands. Like, we visited six other wormholes that belonged to local networks surrounding the network that controlled the cluster of three wormholes. Skippy explained to the crew that the purpose of those visits was to gather information about those local networks and conditions in the area covered by multiple networks. He was lying about that. He lied because I asked him to. Hooray for me. I am a lying sack of shit. Anyway, we liars had work to do. The wormhole emerged a bit early, and we couldn't risk going through too soon, so we waited a nerve-wracking 3 minutes before I ordered the pilots to take us through. Skippy informed us the jump drive capacitors were jam-packed with 103% of their theoretical maximum, and he didn't think he could squeeze in another electron. There was risk in overcharging the capacitors, but we would appreciate having the extra power available if we had to perform multiple jumps in rapid succession. Every other system aboard the ship was operating as well as they could, given that our battle cruiser, as usual, needed to be taken offline for a major refit. That was on my to-do list, right behind investigating why there was always an odd number of socks when laundry was delivered to my cabin. Seriously, what happens to the fourth sock? I don't wear three socks at a time. Well, not recently. When I was at Fort Drum with the 10th Mountain, I sometimes used a third sock to protect my, you know, family jewels while we did PT on freezing cold mornings, but that was a long time ago. Now I dropped an even number of socks into the basket, and an odd number came back. Do my socks try to run away? Are a bunch of them hiding somewhere inside the ship, huddled together in an air duct? Are they waiting for an opportunity to escape the ship? Are they plotting against me? Or maybe instead of a sock going missing, I am actually getting more socks. Maybe a mommy sock and a daddy sock love each other very much, and they do the wild thing in the laundry basket. Or perhaps cloning is involved. Why am I rambling on about socks? Like I said, nervous. Skippy's avatar gave me the secret signal by glancing at his wrist as if he was wearing a watch. Clearing my throat, I tried to project calm confidence in my voice. Mr. Shepard, take us through, if you please. That drew another side eye from Sims. She was checking whether I was off my meds or something. Shepard didn't reply. I could see the amused grin on his face. Hopefully he would still be amused when the operation was over, because the stakes couldn't be higher. Valkyrie came through the event horizon, and seconds later an alarm sounded as the ship was swept by an active sensor pulse. As Skippy's senses recovered from the distortion effect of the wormhole, he told us what he was seeing, feeding the data to the main display. A pair of sensor platforms are within detection range, he warned. That was the problem with having three wormholes within a quarter light-year bubble. It was practical for the senior species to saturate the area with sensor platforms. Those platforms were not supported to have offensive capabilities like weapons or damping fields, and each of the senior species regularly checked to be sure the other side wasn't cheating by hiding weapons in their platforms. Skippy, I asked, are those platforms a problem for us? No, and I'm not detecting any ships within weapons range. We're clear. Maybe the bad guys were waiting to ambush any human ship coming into the cluster. But thanks to Skippy screwing with the wormhole we went through, the bad guys would be waiting in the wrong place. According to the local network, a wormhole had not emerged at our location for over 70,000 years, so the senior species were caught flat-footed by our little trick. Okay, jump option Alpha, engage, We jumped close to the designated negotiation site near the center of the wormhole cluster. The message to UNEF Command specified that ships from Earth were to approach through the wormhole that was located near the border of Maxalk's Rindaloo space. So, we didn't do that. We came in through the wormhole that connected deep in Spider territory. We were also supposed to perform a series of short jumps to be scanned by the sensor platforms before receiving permission to jump into the designated zone for discussions. We didn't do that either. Valkyrie jumped in outside the designated zone, about 3 light minutes away. None of us were surprised to find another sensor platform within 6 light seconds, nor was it surprising to detect 1 Maxalk and 2 Rindaloo ships within 30 light seconds of our position. Passive sensors revealed a space station at the heart of the zone designated for negotiations with 2 battleships nearby, one from the Maxalk's hegemony and 1 from the Rindaloo communal gathering. Yeah, that's what the spiders called their society. Not that it made any difference to us. There were possibly, likely, more ships in and near the zone wrapped in stealth fields. We didn't care about that either. What we did care about was that 1 of the 3 Elder wormholes was currently open, about 2 light seconds from the space station. It was scheduled to be open there for another 18 minutes, its softly glowing event horizon bathing the area with a pale light. Part of our timing, when setting up the operation, depended on that wormhole being open right there and then. Skippy, I had 1 eye on the clock counting down on the main display. Do you see any reason we shouldn't proceed? That depends. Are you ready to kick ass, Joe? I can't wait, Skippy. Although the clock was telling me we had a few seconds to spare. To stall for time, I called out, Bilby, what do you think? Is the ship ready?
Oh, dude. Like, I think this is all kinds of crazy, our ship's AI drawled. But, like Skippy said, we're ready for whatever gnarly shit you have planned. One way or the other, this is gonna be epic.
Good. That's good. Thank you. Skippy's avatar did the thing again where he glanced at an imaginary watch on his wrist as a signal to me. This time I saw Sims's eyes narrow like she noticed something suspicious. Shepard, take us in. Jump option Delta. Engage. Our arrival was many levels of surprise to the senior species. They had no warning of our approach, no signal from the picket ships stationed at the regular emergence points. They didn't expect a human ship to be there so quickly. Likely, they expected us primitive monkeys to argue about what to do until we had no choice. And they didn't expect our distinctive battlecruiser, the fearsome ghost ship. Or maybe they did, but seeing Valkyrie had to be a shock anyway. Standing up from the chair, I was joined by Sims. My hands were up, not in a gesture of surrender, but of peace. No, that was another lie. Damn, it's like I got a big bag of lies on sale and had to use them before they expired. Technically, I had to use the lies before we expired. This is General Bishop. We are here to talk, I announced. No shooting, just talking. It was no surprise to me that 4 Maxalk ships dropped stealth to our port side and an equal number of Rindaloo warships suddenly unmasked to starboard. Counting the 2 battleships that hadn't been in stealth, there were 10 senior species warships against our 1 battlecruiser that was still overdue for a major refit. That was better odds than the time we jumped into a trap, but I didn't like our chances if we had to fight. Surely both sides had more ships than we could see. If it came to a fight, we had already lost anyway.
We are listening, a voice responded.
The translator identified the speaker as a rotten kitty. That's good, thank you. Can we hear from the Rindaloo also? After a pause, a different voice spoke ponderously as if talking was too much effort.
In this matter, the Maxalks may speak for us, human.
Okay. I exchanged a look with Sims. That was unexpected. The spiders letting the Maxalks take charge of the discussions? What did that mean for us? What the hell? It wouldn't change what I would say. The only thing I could say. The display showed another 6 Maxalk ships appearing and 8 more Rindaloo. As long as the numbers on each side were roughly equal, we didn't have to worry about either of the bad guys trying to destroy Valkyrie and take Skippy. Wow. I looked from one side of the display to the other. That's a lot of ships you have out there. I'm sorry, but we didn't bring enough snacks for everyone.
Human, the kitty's voice spat. You are wasting time, and we are not amused. Are you prepared to accept our terms?
Well, sort of. We made a few modifications to your proposal, and we have a counteroffer.
The key terms of our offer are not negotiable.
Well, yes, we understand that. We are proposing minor changes.
What is your counteroffer?
Let's see, I held a tablet in front of me and pretended to read it while keeping one eye on the clock that was counting down. The first of your demands is that all humans pull back to Earth, including from Paradise and our secure site outside the galaxy.
Yeah, I shook my head.
We're not doing that. Given up our starships, our advanced technology, the codes to Elder Weapons and Skippy?
Nope, we're not doing that either.
Your offer just to reduce the impact of the cloud at Earth? That's a non-starter. You—
Bishop!
The kitty yowled.
We will not—
Hey, shithead! Shut your mouth and listen to me. Here is our proposal. You clean up the cloud at Earth. All of it. Then you and the spiders stop interfering with clients who want to ally with us and who want to break away from your coalitions. You cease any and all attacks against humans and against our allies. We keep our starships, our technology, our bases away from Earth. We keep control of our Elder weapons. And we will pull our people off Paradise on our own schedule. Also, we are keeping Skippy. If he wants to stay with us, I mean, he makes his own decisions.
You monkeys are filthy and ignorant, Joe,
Skippy sighed.
But I find your wacky antics to be amusing.
I'll stay a pirate if you don't mind. Happy to have you aboard, Skippy. I gave him a thumbs up. In summary, we're not agreeing to any of the shit you proposed. You get nothing. So, shitheads, I looked back into the virtual camera. What do you think of our proposal?
Ha ha.
The rotten kitty laughed slowly, and I'm not ashamed to say it sent a chill of fear up my spine.
There is a difference between bravery and foolishness, human. Your use of our weapons against us is over. The fact that you had to steal our weapons reveals that you have no such capability of your own. If you had significant destructive power, you would have used it rather than come here. We say no to your proposal.
We also, a spider spoke, say no.
Human, is that all you have to say?
The rotten kitty continued.